Up next, Salinity Tolerance and Kentucky Bluegrass Hybrids, Harris Johnson, Cope Bushman, presenting Paul Harris.
Thank you for that introduction. I'm happy for this opportunity to talk a little bit about some of our work with hybrid bluegrasses and their salinity tolerance. So first of all, I want to answer the question of why the need for salinity tolerance in the first place. And basically, it comes down to increasing water concerns we have in the West. The West is growing very rapidly. Utah, Idaho, Colorado, and Nevada are among the top 10 fastest growing states in the nation, with Utah expected to increase its population by 30% in the next 15 years. So there's more people, there's more houses, more soccer fields, more parks. We're just using more water. Impacting also, in addition to that, erratic weather patterns have become normal in the West. This past winter was an exception where we had very good snowpack and very good above average precipitation, but in the past 10 years we've experienced below average snowpack, which is kind of our main water source throughout the year. Utah gets most of their precipitation in the winter months in the form of snow, and then we rely on that to melt and to, you know, fill our reservoirs, recharge our groundwater. But with water declining, we're forced to look at other possible irrigation sources, and mainly reclaimed water and other untreated brackish sources, which have very high salinity levels and in turn is bad for turf grass situations. And despite all these negative things that are impacting turf grass, the expectations are remaining the same. We're still expected to remain a perfect stand of turf, and we're given no additional resources to do that. And the reason why we're working specifically on Kentucky bluegrass is it's very well adapted to the West. It handles our winters well. It has the ability to go dormant during prolonged drought. And in addition to the fine texture and attractive color, it's, you know, its self-repairing habit is very ideal for high traffic situations, soccer fields, parks. And so I don't want to get too much into the genetics of bluegrass just because I'm not a geneticist, but it's a very difficult grass to breed, and a lot of work went on with the USGA prior to me showing up at Utah State of how, you know, we can develop these hybrids. And basically, bluegrass reproduces apomictically, so the offspring is very, you know, pretty much identical to the mother. And we are trying to isolate these B3 and B2 hybrids, which happen about anywhere from 1 to 10% of the time. And looking at a molecular model, we can see that, in fact,
is there a...
Okay. There it is? Okay, sorry. So we can see that, you know, the mother plant and the father and majority of the offspring are similar to the mother with the exception of a hybrid. And that's one out of 17. And so just like we can't, you know, anticipate any, you know, traits or assume any traits we have in offspring, Kentucky bluegrass is the same thing. You know, because of polyploidy and dosage, we can't, you know, we can't assume that we're going to have this salinity tolerance. And looking at a hypothetical cross, we see two parents where if we assume that little a is the gene for salinity tolerance, we can see that the majority of the offspring are going to be pretty close to the parents, where we get a fraction of the hybrids have increased salinity tolerance. So that's basically what we're focusing on. And these are 12 hybrids from our study, and they were all bred from the same parents, and we can actually see the difference in salinity tolerance. And to measure salinity tolerance, we used electrolyte leakage, and I'll get a little bit more into that later, but we use that as kind of our, you know, defining method. The smaller ratio, the more salt tolerant. And so my research was to evaluate the salinity tolerance of these bluegrass hybrids bred from salt-tolerant parents. And we did this knowing that, for one, bluegrass reproduces apomictically, so we are not going to get very many hybrids. But we can identify these hybrids through markers in flow cytometry. So all the grasses that we looked at, they were in fact hybrids. But we knew that even though they were hybrids, that they weren't going to have the dosage of alleles that we need, that not all of them, rather, are going to have the alleles necessary for salinity tolerance. So some of them are going to be worthless, and a few might stick out. And we hypothesized that there would be, in fact, some of these hybrids that would have mid-parent or better salt tolerance. So we started out with 44 entries. 10 of them were parents, and the rest were hybrids. And they were arranged in a split block design. And these 44 entries came from research, breeding research from the USDA. And they were grown in greenhouse condition and irrigated with a salinity solution that measured six decisiemens per meter. And the reason why we chose this solution is generally poor irrigation water or reclaimed water that we often refer to measures between 3 and 4 decisiemens. We wanted to give them the worst case scenario. You know, we wanted to all but kill them. And so in this greenhouse setting, we applied the solution every other day. They were well watered. And we used an overhead automated boom irrigation system to apply this solution. So we knew that they were getting a similar amount, and we could rely on that, except for when the power goes out and we have to go in on the weekend to do it by hand. And then we took quality ratings weekly for a period of 8 weeks. And it was difficult to do these quality ratings just because we're looking at a 2.5-inch cone, where normally I'm looking at a 1 meter square plot of grass, and it's very easy to judge that. Here, I can see a lot more detail in the plant. And so we tried to base it mostly around the amount of leaf firing in the plant. So basically it could be broken down into three groups: very bad, kind of bad, and not so bad. And in addition to our quality ratings, which are very subjective, they depended on, you know, what my perceptions were of good and bad. I hope they were right. But we also did electrolyte leakage to measure cell damage. And we did that every other week. So there were 4 measurements during the 8 period, for the 8-week period. And we gathered 0.2 grams of clippings from each entry. They were washed free of any residual salt from the irrigation, cut up and then agitated for a period of 20 hours. And after that 20 hours, we measured the electrolyte leakage. Then after an autoclave series, we measured the electrolyte leakage again. And from that, we had a ratio of the before and after. And that's what we used to determine, give it kind of a level of stress. Where, as I said before, the lower the ratio, the better the plant did. The higher ratio, the more stressed it was. And we did this experiment 3 times, early in the summer of 2015, late summer 2015, and early summer 2016. And so we're looking at the first run of the experiment, or, you know, looking at the quality ratings on the left and the electrolyte leakage on the right. And these hybrids are ranged from the ones that rated well at the top down to the worst at the bottom. And that's exactly kind of how we expected it to go. There are some standouts that looked promising, and some that weren't, and some, the majority that were kind of right in the middle. But one thing that we didn't anticipate is a couple of the parents performed poorly, which we expected them to have greater salt tolerance. They're indicated by the yellow triangles, 768, which is a very well-known salt tolerant published Kentucky bluegrass. We expected that to be near the top. But looking at the electrolyte leakage, it did in fact rate very well. So we can kind of throw the quality rating out because maybe the labels got switched or, you know, something happened. But we can rely a little bit more on the electrolyte leakage ratio. So then things got a little bit more complicated. So these graphs, turf quality and electrolyte leakage, they're kind of flipped on their side, but still arranged by the first run with the lower ratings at the bottom to the, you know, upper ratings. So from bad to worse. And we were hoping that the second and third runs would follow these similar trends where we would see, you know, a gradual incline where it was kind of basically just static. And similar with electrolyte leakage, we anticipated that they would decline similar to the first run, but that wasn't the case. And we're looking at factors of why that would happen. Obviously, when we did the experiment at the first part of the summer, the temperatures were hot, the days were longer, and as we got further the second run, it was in the fall, so we didn't have any additional lighting, it's cooler, and so we think that greenhouse conditions played a large role in that, but still we should have seen, you know, despite different conditions, more of a similar correlation. And as we look at four hybrids specifically, the hybrids are in red, hybrid A, B, C, and D, and they all have the same parents. We see that there were some hybrids that followed similar patterns with their parents, and some didn't. They did good on some runs, but not so well on the other ones. That was looking at turf quads. This is electrolyte leakage, where we expected them to follow a little bit closer, and some, in fact, did. For example, hybrid A followed closely with electrolyte leakage, where we were looking at hoping for a smaller ratio, and in fact, we did see that. And the other ones were a little bit higher and more a little bit inconsistent. So despite all these inconsistencies, we can draw a few conclusions. So the red line indicates the average turf quality and electrolyte leakage across all the hybrids. And if we look at all three runs, this is the first run, but just to give you an example, we can isolate about eight hybrids that consistently had good turf quality ratings and consistently had low electrolyte leakage ratios. And so we can take these hybrids and kind of look forward to future experiments. And this project is far from over. We have a lot of more breeding work to do to try to increase tolerance through crossing. And then once we get that zeroed in, we can start to look at seed production and assessments of turf quality in the field. We could have the best greenhouse grass in the world, but if it can't be mowed once a week or if it can't produce enough seed, we're kind of dead in the water and we start back from the beginning. And with that, I'd like to recognize my advisors, Dr. Paul Johnson, Dr. Kelly Cope from the Center for Water Efficient Landscaping at Utah State University, and for their funding and resources, and Dr. Sean Bushman for his breeding work and his greenhouse space and his expertise. Are there any questions?
Time for questions?
It is lunchtime. We can just go.
So did you try doing rank correlations?
We did a lot with statistics, and that's kind of a funny 11th hour statistics nightmare where we all butted heads and didn't have anything to present. But we did do some rank correlations, and the electrolyte leakage readings they varied so much that we weren't able to see a huge differences. Instead of, you know, three replications where we saw a 25, a 22, and a 21, it'd be more like a 45, a 25, and a 15. So there were a lot of inconsistencies there. So the rank correlations, we are still working on that, but it won't be as cut and dry as we hope it would be.
So that should help you rank correlations. You've got a lot of noise between mm-hmm. the means of your different runs.
Yeah.
Should help you what you're really after is just a ranking of the individuals within that test, right?
Yes.
So if you just ignore the values and just do correlations based on their rank.
Mm-hmm.
In each run.
Yeah, and we will do that. Friday came too quick.
Okay, thank you very much.